This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 10th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 168. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, special guest, John Horgan. Not Premier
John Horgan. Horgan's the Premier.com or something like that.
I believe the best way forward is to put the politics behind us.
But Professor John Horgan from Georgia State University.
Really funny receiving correspondence from people thinking that I am that John Horgan. And I don't know, does it disappoint them or anger them further? But I always, take steps to thank them for taking an interest in reaching out to their elected official. So good for them.
The other John Horgan is the director of the Violent Extremism Research Group, and he joins me to analyze Donald Trump's January 6th riot at the Capitol, one of the darkest days in American history. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or was last week another display of the stark differences between Canada and the United States? Canadian reporters, including yours truly, were busy finding politicians and government officials who disobeyed public health orders against holiday travel. American reporters were searching for the names of the rioters from the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Five people died in one of the ugliest days in American history. You would be forgiven if you thought it was the 53rd week of 2020, but it's 2021. A president's first duty is to the safety of the American people, not to grab or hold on to power. It was yet another day of Trump selfishness. It was another wasted day in the pandemic. Almost 4,000 people died of the coronavirus in the U.S. on January the 6th. Trump won't be attending Joe Biden's inauguration on January 20th, a day many around the world will be breathing a sigh of relief, but curb your enthusiasm, there will be no rainbows or unicorns. China's Xi Jinping, Russia's Vladimir Putin, Iran's Ali Khamenei, North Korea's Kim Jong-un, and Saudi Arabia's King Salman will carry on their dictatorships. It will be another day in a dangerous world. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the South China Morning Post, China mocks U.S. double standards over capital chaos versus Hong Kong. From officials to online commenters, Chinese critics accuse Washington of hypocrisy in its response to the storming of the Hill by Trump supporters. Liu Chang, a specialist on U.S. affairs at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, said Hong Kong protesters inflicted worse damage on the Legislative Council building than those in the U.S. did on Capitol Hill. But Hong Kong activists said the two protests were not comparable because the Hong Kong protesters were pressing for democracy and storming a symbol of autocracy. In the Japan Times, Japanese sports brace for impact of a new state of emergency. The sumo world was rocked by Tuesday's announcement that Yokozuna Hakuho had tested positive for COVID-19. The JSA decided to proceed with the first basho of 2021, sending polymerase chain reaction tests to all of its wrestlers and officials. The Women's Japanese Baseball League announced that it would postpone 12 games. The J-League and Nippon Professional Baseball are scheduled to kick off their 2021 campaigns in late February and late March, respectively, but a continued rise in COVID-19 cases could affect their seasons. Meanwhile, Canadian Dick Pound, the most senior member of the International Olympic Committee, told the BBC that the postponed to July Tokyo Olympics could be in doubt because of the, quote, ongoing elephant in the room, end quote, of the coronavirus. In Apple Daily, Chinese company accused of spying on workers with invasive cushion. A tech company based in Hangzhou gave the cushions to its employees. The cushions would send warm reminders to employees who have been sitting for too long, nudging them to get out of their seats and move around. Employees later discovered that, aside from the health indicators, the cushions were also secretly collecting other data, including how long workers were away from their desks and feeding it to the company's human resources department. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
Como News. Inslee questions how almost 100 people breached fencing at Governor's Mansion. Governor Jay Inslee revealed Thursday that he and his wife were inside the residence when the breach occurred. It's the Washington State Patrol's job to provide 24/7 security for the governor and the governor's mansion in Olympia, which is encircled by steel fencing. Washington is an open carry state where people can carry a weapon on their person if it's visible. At Wednesday's rally, weapons were seen in the crowd. In the Seattle Times, 14 passengers may be banned after no-mask rowdy flight from D.C. to Seattle, Alaska Airlines says. Those facing the possible ban were on Flight 1085 from Dulles Airport to SeaTac International Airport on Thursday night. To date, Alaska Airlines has banned 288 people for violating its mask policy. In Oregon Public Broadcasting, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler confronted at restaurant, says woman swatted at him. Videos posted on social media show a group yelling and cursing at Wheeler as he sat in an indoor dining tent in Nob Hill. A Portland Police Bureau spokesman described the interaction as a punch. No injuries were reported, and the suspect, who has not yet been identified, left. According to the police, no arrests were made. During months of protests against police violence and for racial justice, anger has risen toward the mayor. On the topic of the riot at the U.S. Capitol, Portland Trailblazers guard Damian Lillard told the Oregonian, quote, "We pretty much live in two Americas," end quote. Lillard said that being a black man, he knows what the situation would have been had people of color decided to take that type of route. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
So, let's have trial by combat. Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down anyone you want, but I think right here we're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength, and you have to be strong.
As of storming Congress itself.
Because they work for us. They don't get to steal it from us. They don't get to tell us we didn't see what we saw.
We respect the law. We were good people. The government did this to us. We were normal, good, law-abiding citizens, and you guys did this to us. We want our country back. We are protesting for our freedom right now. That's the difference.
Those were sounds from the January 6th Save America rally in Washington, D.C., where President Donald Trump and his lawyer Rudy Giuliani fired up the crowd, a crowd that proceeded to storm into the Capitol, a riot, one of the darkest days in American history, and sounds from inside the Capitol as it happened on Britain's ITV television station. Those are some of the other sounds you've heard. And to discuss this historic day, this day of infamy, is Professor John Horgan with the Global Studies Institute and Department of Psychology at the Georgia State University in Atlanta. He is John G. Horgan, who holds degrees from University College Cork in Ireland. Cork was the home of Pat Horgan, the late father of British Columbia Premier John J. Horgan.
Professor Horgan, you're the second most famous John Horgan right now. You've been mistaken for Premier John Horgan a few times, I understand.
Well, let's just hope I never run for office in BC and I'll cause utter confusion. I did not know that your John Horgan has a lineage back to Cork. That's fascinating. I had no idea.
And you tweeted something interesting that a failure to take urgent action regarding both the president and those who stormed the Capitol will only further fuel a movement that will outlast us all. This is going to leave scars for years to come. And what was your reaction as you watched this unfold, the insurrection of the Capitol?
I had CNN on in the background, and like most days, I have it on mute, and while I'm working in a corner. And I kept glancing over at the images that seemed to be increasingly distressing. And after about 10 minutes, I ended up being glued to the television like everybody else. I mean, what can I say? I was stunned. I was shocked. I was upset. I was appalled. I was angry. And I think we're all still working through these reactions. And at the same time, I wasn't surprised. I and many others who have made it our life's work to study these actors and the conditions that give rise to them have said there was always a heightened risk that this would happen. In early 2020, I gave a briefing to the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and I said that we need to be prepared for the greater than zero percentage possibility that there could be election-related violence. I don't think any of us could have predicted that it would unfold the way that it did until the last week to 10 days, when we had not just the president of this country, but other elected officials, people like Ted Cruz, Rudy Giuliani, who did nothing less than whip up an already radical fringe to the point of mobilization. I mean, this is extraordinary. This is the kind of thing that I see time and time again in a terrorism context. But if you remove the names and the labels and these little catchy phrases we have for this group or that group, I mean, we're talking about the same fundamental dynamics. So, but to answer your question, I mean, I was shocked and stunned and appalled and sickened and not surprised.
There's the trend towards the sectarian or tribal violence. We saw right-wing protests outside capitals in recent months in Washington and Oregon, a summer of left-wing violence in Portland and Seattle, Antifa-related groups. There was, of course, the foiled plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan and take over the Michigan Capitol by the Michigan militia groups. There was the black militia group NFAC that protested outside the Kentucky Derby back in the fall. What is next?
I don't know that I can give you an easy or simple answer to that question. I think what comes next in the short term is an attempt to regain some kind of control over events that right now, as in today, tomorrow, this week, the next 2 weeks, threaten to spiral completely out of control. I think beyond that and into the new administration, there are questions around whether or not we are equipped to competently conceive of a national security strategy that seeks to tackle issues like misinformation and disinformation and all of the kinds of factors and causes that have given rise to where we are right now. The short answer is that there are lots of things we're going to have to do. And to be frank, I'm not entirely convinced that we are either equipped or ready or willing to deal with them.
Our guest on the Big Deal feature is Professor John Horgan from Georgia State University. The Trump presidency exploited economic decline and a loss of faith in the political system. Trump, a populist, became a vehicle for a new wave of right-wing extremism that the world saw on January the 6th. I also asked John Horgan about the concepts of disengagement and de-radicalization.
As someone who has studied terrorism for about 20 years now, I've been interested in not just the process whereby people get radicalized and how people get radicalized to the point where they are willing to engage in acts of violent extremism, or terrorism for short. I've also been interested in the process whereby people stop and move away, and disengagement and de-radicalization are two words that we, two labels rather, that we use to describe that. So the distinction is pretty simple. I mean, disengagement means stopping. It means stopping doing what you're doing. And that might mean, you know, for someone who's involved in terrorism, for example, it might mean that you literally, you are arrested, or you surrender, or you decide, you know what, I just don't want to do this anymore. And that routinely happens. I've spoken to many, many terrorists over the years about how and why they eventually decide to stop. Disengagement simply means stopping. De-radicalization is something slightly different, and it comes from the realization that just because you stop engaging in terrorism, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are somehow now separate or devoid of your radical beliefs. There are lots of people who stop engaging in acts of terrorism, but who still harbor those same beliefs. So the question is, you know, do you need to change the way people think in order to get them to stop doing what they're doing? And these are questions that in my field we ask all the time. De-radicalization in itself actually refers to two things. So de-radicalization is the process whereby people sort of, you know, move away from their commitment to radical beliefs. And then the assumption is, well, that means that they are at lesser risk of re-engaging in terrorism. And de-radicalization is also a word that we use to sort of, it's a shorthand label we use to describe all of these programs that aim to facilitate that. To your broader point, though, I'm not entirely convinced that we can scale those sorts of things up to address our societal problems right now. You know, when I talk about disengagement and de-radicalization or de-radicalization programs, I'm talking about interventions in prisons or in places of detention where we're trying to do assessment on terrorist offenders to see if they can be released back into the community safely, and that we can be sure that they have, you know, finally moved away from that kind of life. I think we have a far, far, far bigger problem on our hands when it comes to dealing with the legacy of Trump and his supporters. I don't know that something like de-radicalization can be scaled up, but it strikes me that we have far more basic tasks and challenges ahead of us. And I think some of it is going to be learning how to have a conversation with people that we disagree with. And that goes to, that applies to everybody. I think some of the challenge ahead is going to be about learning what it means to be a human being again. I think we are so polarized right now that we see, no matter what side of the political spectrum you sit on, we see the mere existence of somebody else or of some other party as a threat to our own existence. I mean, this is how far we have come in the past 4 years. And I think I don't think disengagement and de-radicalization, those ideas, are going to get us out of this.
You do find within your research, though, that the main reason that people do leave radical movements is that they can find a group's goals unrealistic, they can disagree with the methods, and they can also realize that there's a conflict between their loyalty to their group, their radical group, as well as their loyalty to their family. But of course, it's easier said than done. These are things someone, I guess, has to realize along the way, or has to be brought to their attention somehow.
True. I mean, one of the really challenging issues here is that it's, you know, you can't sort of get in front of someone and shake them and say, hey, you need to you need to disengage, you need to leave this conspiracy theory behind. It doesn't really happen like that. For the most part, people tend to see the light, as it were, on their own. And the main factor that causes disengagement is disillusionment. Now, as you've just said, I mean, that disillusionment might come because the person realizes, look, it's just not going anywhere, and we're not gonna win this election, or we're not gonna you know, do what we're trying to do here. But there were other reasons as well. I mean, people might lack the kinds of relationships they once had because people are now moving away from them. They might get bored. They might find that it's taking a toll on their psychological or well-being or their health generally. So there are all kinds of reasons why people get fed up and move away from these worldviews.
Finally, is there any advice or are there any resources for people who see members of their family, friends, co-workers starting to dabble in this before it gets too late, before they're entrenched? What can be done or said to help those that are near them to prevent them from falling down this deep, dark hole?
That's a great question. So speaking as a psychologist for a moment, the research tells us that, you know, theoretically, any one of us might fall prey to conspiracy theory. In reality, we're not all equally susceptible, and it has much to do with our individual circumstances at any one moment in time. If we are in distress, and especially if we harbor some kind of resentment as to who might be the cause of that distress, we are especially prone to believing and accepting and embracing ideas that help us make sense of that. You know, anxiety, alienation, these are the kinds of things that make us all far more susceptible to the power of conspiracy theories. And I think in a very practical sense, you know, when we see our spouses, our sons or daughters, our parents, our neighbors, friends, starting to go down these rabbit holes, it isn't so much about trying to challenge them or tell them that they're crazy or that, you know, you don't want to have anything to do with them anymore. It's about trying to figure out what might be going on in their lives that may have led them to that point. That is easier said than done because the kind of content, the kinds of ideas that people spew as a result of their embracing of these theories, ironically, is the one thing that makes us less likely to want to talk to them. So it's a tall order, but I think that'll give you a sense of just what kinds of things go on in people's lives to lead them into these dark corners in the first place.
On the Breaker.News podcast, Professor John Horgan, with the Global Studies Institute and Department of Psychology at Georgia State University in Atlanta and Director of the Violent Extremism Research Group. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're all in this together. And we've got to brave the stormy weather. You can count on us. We're your neighbor.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a difference maker. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to those doctors, nurses, technicians, and delivery drivers helping deliver coronavirus vaccines in British Columbia. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 10th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 10th in 1920, the Treaty of Versailles officially ended World War I? It was supposed to be the war to end all wars. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.